Welcome, welcome, welcome. How are we doing tonight? There we go. All right, Brandon, I see you. Let's go. Hey, guys, grab your Bibles. We're going to turn to Matthew chapter 18. As you get there, we're going to talk about conflict, as Oakley said. We're going to close this summer talking about conflict. Oh, by the way, many of you may not know that Oakley is going to be preaching on Sunday at Crossings this Sunday. So, come support, send your prayers up this week just for clarity and power that God would use her to draw people to Jesus. So be here this Sunday. It's going to be fantastic. No pressure, Oakley. So when I think of conflict, I think of one word. When I think, in terms of how it feels, how conflict feels, all right? And when I'm going to give you my word, and I guarantee you an image or some sort of scene will play out into your head immediately. At least it does for me. And when I think of conflict, I think of the word ambush. That is the word I feel. Like I think of a battlefield, I think of the Revolutionary War, right? Where the Patriots are hiding in the woods and the Redcoats are walking down the road and they ambush them, right? They don't know what's coming and they are overtaken quickly. Like that's what I think about when I think about conflict, because it always feels like an ambush. On either side, right? If you're the one that finds yourself offended or hurt or wounded or betrayed, it feels like you got ambushed. You didn't see that coming. A friend did something that broke a trust. It feels like an ambush. Or if you're the person that someone comes to and says, hey, we need to talk. And now all of a sudden your heart drops into your stomach because those are the worst four words ever, right? We need to talk. It feels like an ambush. You're like, well, where's this coming from? And so here's what I want to do tonight. If you have a pen, great. If you want to pull out your phone and your camera, great. Just giving you fair warning, we are going to cover a lot of material tonight. So if you're a note taker, buckle up, all right? We're going to post some of this on social, just, and you can always go back and listen to it. But we're going to get through some stuff tonight. But I want to start with a couple disclaimers, okay? Things that as I prepared this message, I thought about like, but here's a point of contention or here's some nuance that we need to cover. And can we just be honest? Conflict interrelationally is full of nuance. Every person is different. Every friendship is different. Every interaction is different. And so what I'm going to share with you tonight, I think from a general sense, a 30,000 foot view, these are amazing, helpful biblical principles on how to handle conflict resolution in a biblical manner. Is every nuance going to be covered tonight? Absolutely not. Not even close. So if you have questions, if you've got a situation, please come find me. Come find Oakley, Trayvon, like our whole team. We would love to sit down and help you walk through something. If you're like, hey, this is what's going on. How do I approach this? Okay. So here's my disclaimers. Number one, what I'm going to share with you tonight is a model that we are working towards. All right, it's not this is the way it's done every time and you have to do it this way. We're taking baby steps here, right? We talked last week about confrontation and conflict and that no one ever actually sits us down and we don't take a course on how to conflict well. All right, we just learn from osmosis of living in a society that says you win or you lose. You are either right or you are wrong. And so just understand that you and whoever you're in conflict with, you guys are infants in this process. And so this is a model that we are working towards. And not only that, it takes two people to make this work, right? You need to hear me say that again. It takes two people who are on the same page to make this go really well. And so here's the kind of the not so great part is what I'm going to give you tonight is going to help you. But that doesn't mean that the person that you talk to or the person that talks to you is going to do it well, they're gonna do it right, but that's okay. That's why this is a model to work towards, okay? And then when we talk about conflict, I thought, you know what we need to hear, because I know I need to hear this, is what I'm gonna talk about tonight is not for the person you're in conflict with, it is for you, okay? Because when I hear these things, I'm like, yeah, they need to do this better. Yep, they need to come to me and they need to do this better. They're the ones, right? Fight that urge all night tonight. Turn the mirror on ourselves and say, all right, what do I need to hear from God's word about how to deal with people in conflict. Not how do they need to act, how do I need to act? And then the goal, obviously, in a perfect world, it is reconciliation, because like we talked about last week, God has given us the ministry of reconciliation as Christians. God has reconciled us to himself through Christ, and now says, go and reconcile. Go be my ambassadors. So the goal is obviously reconciliation, but not everybody wants to reconcile, right? So what's the goal then? Here's the goal, is to be obedient, humble, and gentle as we approach relational conflict. It is the motivation of our heart. It is the words that we speak and how we treat people in conflict. We obediently step into it. We humbly and gently approach it. And then lastly, this is my last disclaimer. As you walk these truths out, as you walk obediently, give yourself and the other person an abundance of grace. I mean like buckets and buckets and buckets of grace. Because we're not good at this. We are not naturally good at this. Everything in our ego, everything in our pride says, I want to win and I want to be right. In order for me to win and for me to be right, you have to lose and you have to be wrong. That is every human that we encounter. It's either why we go to it because we want to win or we avoid it at all costs. So those are my disclaimers. This is a model we're working towards. This is for you, not the person you're in conflict with. The goal is obedience, humility, and gentleness, and to give grace abundantly. Now, let's get going. Matthew chapter 18, 15, 16, and 17. This is Jesus speaking, and this is what he says. He says, if your brother sins against you, go tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have won your brother. But if he won't listen, take one or two others with you so that by the testimony of two or three witnesses, every fact may be established. If he doesn't pay attention to them, tell the church. If he doesn't pay attention even to the church, let him be like a Gentile and a tax collector to you. Now, normally I would give an entire message just on this passage, but here are my observations, and then we're gonna move on to the really practical stuff. Number one we see in here is discern the small stuff. That's the first thing I see. He says, if your brother has sinned against you. So it's an if. Not every offense is a sinful thing. It might be some preference that you have. They may have been rude or inconsiderate, but maybe, just maybe, we could say, you know what? That hurt my feelings, but I know them. And I'm gonna give them the benefit of the doubt that they didn't mean it the way I took it. And so you know what? I'm not gonna make a mountain out of a molehill. I'm going to forgive them right here and right here. And we don't need to escalate this. Proverbs 19:11 says, it is to your benefit to overlook an offense. Okay, so I love how Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, maybe they didn't. Maybe we could just say, you know what? I'm gonna let this go. I'm gonna overlook it. I'm gonna assume the best of them. We're gonna move forward. Second thing I see is that when it's no longer an if, we need to deal with the big stuff once we've discerned the small stuff. Because some of that small stuff is big stuff. And the way I think through this is like, hey, if it lingers with you for a week or two, it might be big stuff. And so maybe pause like we did last week, say, hey, take 7 days, pray for the person, and let's discern, is this something we need to continue on, and you need to go meet with them? All right, so we discern the small stuff, we deal with the big stuff, and then lastly, we see that we aren't to stop, but widen the circle. Right, when we go to this person, we say, hey, this is what's going on, this is what you said, this is what you did, it hurt me, or hey, I see this in your life, and I don't think that's the kind of person you wanna be, and I just wanna talk to you about it, and they're like, hey, I don't wanna hear it, I think you're seeing it wrong, like, hey, let's bring in a third party, let's bring in somebody else, but here's what you do. You don't bring in your best friend who's only gonna fight for your perspective. You bring in a neutral third party that you both respect, and you bring them together and say, hey, we need some clarity here. Because if you see what Jesus says, but the testimony of two or three witnesses, every fact may be established. Because it's in our nature to put our argument in the best light. And so we bring in a third party for the betterment of both of us. So that the truth is being told. Someone that's not emotionally invested in the conflict can say, hey, okay, I'm hearing you say this and you say this, and they can kind of mediate. All right, so when things don't go well, don't give up, widen the circle. That's what I see from Matthew 18. Just a really quick glance. Discern the small stuff, deal with the big stuff, don't stop, but widen the circle. So, how do you initiate healthy conflict resolution? There's gonna be no so what's tonight, it's all so hows, okay? Here we go. The umbrella verse that we're gonna look at for the so how do we initiate, how do you go to your brother, how do you go to your, like if you're the initiator, how do you do this? This is the scariest part. It takes a lot of maturity and a lot of courage to step into this situation because there's a lot of fear. If it goes wrong, my friendship's over, right? That's why we don't do it. So how do we initiate? The umbrella verse for this, for the so how, is Romans 12:10. Love one another deeply as brothers and sisters. Take the lead in honoring one another. So the goal is not to win, it's not to prove them wrong, it's how can I honor them while confronting them? That's gonna make you pause, and I guarantee you it'll make you pray. How do you honor someone who has maybe hurt you? How do you honor someone that maybe has broken a trust? How do you honor someone that they're living in such a way that you love them enough to say, that's not who you are, and I know that's not what you wanna be doing? So here's the first thing we do. When we initiate, we seek and pray for perspective, humility, and wisdom, right? We talk about we stop and we pause. Do not walk into these confrontations when your emotions are high. Just don't do it. Pause, withdraw, seek, pray for perspective, humility, and wisdom. 1 Peter 5:5. And all of you, dress yourselves in humility as you relate to one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. We need to prepare our hearts and our motives before we step into healthy conflict resolution. We need to ask ourselves questions like, am I seeing this correctly? Why is this bothering me so much? What's at the root of this? So that we can walk in saying, you know what, I've prayed about this. I love this phrase. I've prayed myself prepared. We need to pray ourselves prepared for these conversations because they are scary. All right, number two, after we seek and pray for perspective, humility, and wisdom, we plan your words carefully. And here's what I don't mean. I don't mean you are scripting out the entire conversation because it won't go that way. Guaranteed it won't go that way. Don't script the whole thing. Proverbs 15:1-2 says this, a gentle answer deflects anger, but harsh words make tempers flare. The tongue of the wise makes knowledge appealing, but the mouth of a fool belches out foolishness. I love that. The fool belches foolishness, but the wise makes it appealing. And so we need to plan carefully. How can I say this with gentleness? How can I say this so that they'll actually hear it? And I'm not just venting. Ephesians 4:29 says this, don't use foul or abusive language. Let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. And so we don't go into these conversations condemning. We don't go into these conversations shaming somebody. We say, hey, how can I gently share this with them as to honor them and so that they will hear it? Guys, this is a challenge. And it is a good one to embrace and to learn. Think about the conversations that you had that have not gone well. I'll bet you anything that whoever spoke to you or when you spoke, the goal was not to honor them and be gentle with them and show them the love of Christ as you confront them or they confronted you. So what do we do? I talked to one of our counselors here. He's a buddy of mine. I'm like, hey, real world experience, what do you see in your counseling office when it comes to conflict? What's the most helpful? If you could talk to young adults, what would you say? And he said this. He goes, when it comes to planning your words carefully, he said, soften the startup. Like when you start the conversation, start softly. And he said, by asking permission and giving an invitation. And I was like, you're gonna have to give me a little bit more than that. What do you mean? This is like counselor speak. He said, you're inviting them into a deeper conversation, not into confrontation. And so in order to do that, instead of saying, hey, we need to talk, say something like, are you in a place where we can discuss something? Right? You're asking for their permission. Are you in a place where we can discuss something? Another thing you could say is, I have a thought and I'm not sure how to say it well. And I'm pretty nervous to bring it up. Can we talk about it? Right? You're inviting them into a deeper conversation at the same time asking for permission to have a hard conversation. Humility always wins. And this is how you enter the conversation with humility. I don't know what I'm going to say. I'm really nervous to talk to you about this. But could we talk about it? All of a sudden, they know you're not coming in to punch them in the face. You're coming humbly saying, hey, we need to talk and I'm scared. I don't know anything more disarming than honesty and vulnerability. Instead of coming in strong over the top, you come humbly before them and say, hey, I'm nervous, I'm scared, I don't wanna have this conversation, whatever. A couple more. Maybe you say this, can I make a comment that might come out sideways? Can we talk about it? Like, I'm gonna say something, I don't even know how to say it. It might come out sideways and it may sound way different than I want to say it, but can we talk about it? Can we have a back and forth? Or lastly, hey, I've been praying about something. Would you be open to having a conversation about what I've been praying about? Right? Great ways to soften the startup. We plan our words carefully. Number three, we choose the right time and place. Proverbs 16:21 says this, a prudent person foresees danger and takes precautions. The fool goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. As a young husband, I did this all the time. I chose the wrong time and the wrong place to bring stuff up. And Taylor did as well, right? 11:30 after a long day is not the time to have a conflict conversation. Not gonna go well, ever, right? We need to make sure our emotions are under control. We need to pick the right time and place for our hearts. And then we need to be honoring and considerate of them. Like, when's the best time for them? Maybe it's early morning coffee. Maybe it's after work in the evening. Maybe it's a lunch conversation. Maybe it's on a weekend. Maybe it's after church or after the gathering since they've just gotten done worshiping the Lord and listening to God's word preached. They're gonna be in a better spot, right? We gotta pick a time and a place. We need to be wise about that. Number four, we need to be clear, accurate, and thorough. And this is where that humility and gentleness are gonna be ultra important. We need to be clear, accurate, and thorough. 1 Corinthians 14:33, Paul says this, for God is not a God of confusion, but of peace. And I don't know about you, but I've had people that throw the entire kitchen sink at me when they've confronted me before. Like, you've done this, 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 this. You always do this. You never do this. And it's like, whoa, all right, let's fight. I'm going to go down your list. I'm going to shoot down every logical reason you just gave me. And now the confrontation is no longer about what you're going to talk about. And so we keep it simple, clear. Say, this is what happened. This is how it made me feel when you did this. And so we need to be clear, accurate, and thorough. Proverbs 18:17 says, the one who states his case first seems right until the other comes and examines him. And so part of being clear and accurate and thorough is asking them, like, am I seeing this clearly? If we're gonna be thorough, we need to get their side. And so after maybe you've gone to them and said, hey, you did this, I see this in your life, am I seeing this right? Like, can you help me make sure, if I'm not seeing this right, please tell me. Because sometimes just because I think it or just because I feel it doesn't mean it is accurate. And so we need to be willing to ask questions like, hey, I've listened to you, I've watched. And then Proverbs 18:2 says, fools have no interest in understanding. They only want to air their own opinions. And this is a danger for us. We just wanna go in and we just wanna air our own opinions and we don't really care what they have to say. We don't really care about their perspective. We just want them to know how much they've hurt us or how disappointed I am in them. But that's what the fool does. The wise man says, hey, give me feedback. What are you hearing me say? Am I seeing this clearly? And then fifthly, as we initiate, once the conversation's over, we trust God with the outcome. Psalm 37, 3 says this, trust in the Lord and do good. Live in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Trust God with the outcome. Because it takes two people for these conversations to go well. And can we just put a bet out there that most of the time, two people are not gonna handle it perfectly? That maybe the person you went and talked to, maybe they need some time to process what you've said. Maybe they respond in a way that you were not expecting. That's okay. You are not in charge of changing their heart. That's God's job. We are called to be humble and obedient and gentle, honoring one another above ourselves. And so we trust God with the outcome. Now, if I'm really honest, when I was your age, when I heard talks like this, and this plays into our dating talks as well. Like, we'll give you some tips and tricks, like, hey, this is how you date intentionally, this is how you bring clarity, all that stuff. And then we always get stories of like, okay, you were intentional and super intense, bro. You need to back it off, okay? You did not hear what we were saying. So here's where this same concept comes into play. You're gonna hear, Andy, this is good. I'm gonna try this. I'm gonna be clear. I'm gonna be accurate. I'm gonna pick a good time and a place. I'm gonna pray. Because if I do this well, then they will automatically respond exactly how I want them to. We cannot do that. My counselor friend said it's the if-then mentality. We cannot have the if-then mentality. If I do this, then they will do this. Because that's not the goal. The goal is not to control them. It is not to manipulate them. The goal is to be obedient and to be humble and to be gentle. And then we trust God with the outcome. All right, let's turn the page. Instead of the one being the one initiating, now let's look at what does it look like to receive confrontation. Because my guess is none of you are perfect. And my guess is at some point in your life, someone either has wanted to confront you, or you have been confronted, or you will be confronted. This is going to happen. So, really quick, my thought on this. This is the most difficult part of conflict. Like when we are the ones confronting, that's difficult and scary. Receiving it, 10 times worse. Because now we're the ones that are under the microscope. Our pride gets involved, our ego gets involved. And this requires an incredibly high level of maturity. All right, it just does. So just know that this is going to be a growth area for all of us. So how then do we handle being confronted in a healthy way? Well, the author of Hebrews tells us this is not, most likely they're not gonna do it right. All right, just give lots of grace. He also tells us that in Hebrews 12:10, that correction does not feel good in the moment, but it is good for you. All right, we need to pound that into our head. A confronting conversation never feels good, ever. Like, because they're coming to say that either point something out that we've done wrong, or they're pointing something out that is not consistent with what we believe. And that's gonna be awkward, it's going to hurt. But know this, if you have a friend that's willing to come to you, they are terrified. We need to remember this. If they're coming to us to say, hey, I love you enough to tell you something difficult, hopefully they've prayed it up. And they're probably most likely concerned and scared that, hey, this might be the end of our friendship. But our response to being confronted requires an incredible level of maturity. Proverbs 12:15 says, the way of the fool seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. Are we willing to listen to advice? So how do we handle ourselves when we are confronted? Number one, listen attentively. James 1:19, my dear brothers and sisters, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. Andy is the opposite of this. I am quick to become angry. I am quick to speak and slow to listen. Anybody else? Like, dude, if you come at me, the last thing I want to do is not say anything. The last thing I want to do is listen to you unpack where I'm not perfect. My ego comes in. So we need to listen attentively. Our first response is never this. And so we need to fight the urge to come up with that checklist of how I'm going to destroy your argument one by one by one. And we need to listen to understand instead of listen to defend. Number two, as we listen attentively, we need to be open to receive the truth that they are sharing. We need to receive the truth they're sharing. Proverbs 18:12. Before his downfall, a person's heart is proud, but humility comes before honor. Again, my friend, my counselor friend gave me a cycle of unhealthy response to conflict and a healthy response. I want to share those with you. He said the unhealthy cycle looks like this: deflect, defend, and then counterattack. He's like, when someone comes to confront us, our natural response is to deflect. And that looks like, it's not my problem, this is your problem. It's not my problem. I'm gonna busy myself. Whatever. No big deal, it's not that big of a deal. We're gonna deflect. The second thing we like to do is we like to defend ourselves. We make excuses for why that's not a big deal and why you're overreacting. We can't do that. We need to listen attentively and receive truth in that counterattack, right? I mean, some of you are really good at this. I'm really good at this. I see this every day, all day with my children. They do this lesson. Like, if you want to see this in action, come to my house. Deflect, defend, counterattack, tears. Dad steps in, big dad voice. All right, sit down. Here we go. You know, like, that's it. I see this all the time in my kids. I see it in myself because I don't want to sit with maybe the ways that I have fallen short or the ways that I have let someone down. I don't want to do that. So we don't deflect, defend, or counterattack. Instead, number three, is we respond graciously. So we listen attentively, we receive the truth that they may be sharing, all right? And then we respond graciously, and this is difficult. Because we are so sensitive. We live in a society where everything offends us. What would it look like as Christians to be unoffendable? That we're so teachable and we're so humble that you cannot offend us. That when someone actually says something like, you know what, you're probably right. Okay. And so we respond graciously. Colossians 4:6, Paul writes, let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt so that you may know how you should answer each person. So instead of deflecting, defending, and counterattacking, this is what we do. We reflect, we own, and we ask. Instead of deflecting, we reflect, all right? Tell me more. Help me understand where you're coming from. And we take a reflective posture. Guys, I'm telling you, this takes so much maturity, right? They have come to you and they've said, hey, your life, you're living hypocrite, right? I see this, you say this, what's going on? It's gonna be so hard for us to be like, who the heck do you think you are? You don't know me, right? But instead, what have we responded with? Hey, tell me more. What are you seeing that makes you say that? Like, I wanna know more. So we reflect and then we own. We need to be willing to receive and own our part. Here's the hard part, is if you disagree with what they're saying. But here's my encouragement. Take 100% of your 10%. If only 10% of what they're saying is true, take 100% ownership of that. If 1% of what they're saying is true, take 1%, 100% ownership of that 1%. Instead of arguing about what percent is your fault versus their fault, or, you know, just say, you know what? What is it that I can own here? Maybe it's my response wasn't right, or maybe I waited too long to follow up with something, or just like, we reflect so that we can then own our part. And then we continue to ask deeper questions. Instead of counterattacking, we start asking things like, hey, would you clarify something for me? Or maybe at the end of the conversation, hey, would you be willing to pray for me about this? Like right now, would you pray for me? Humility, gentleness. Paul says, let your words be seasoned with salt. We need to respond to confrontation in a way that preserves the relationship. Instead of freaking out, instead of yelling, instead of ghosting them, we speak in a way that preserves the relationship instead of ending it. We say things like this. It's okay to say things like, do you mind if I take some time to think about this? That is okay to say. They may want an immediate response. It is okay to say, you know what? You've given me a lot to think about. Do you mind if I go just think about this? We can talk about this again later. That's okay to say. If they're not accurate in what they're saying, say something like this. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me. I always want to be open to what you and others want to say to me. I promise to think carefully about what you have said. Again, thank you for bringing your thoughts sharing your thoughts with me. You're not agreeing that they're right, but you're honoring their effort to come to you by saying, hey, thanks for coming to me. I'm gonna think about what you said. So thank you for caring for me enough to do that. I know this was probably scary for you. I always want to be teachable to hear feedback. But if they are accurate in what they're saying, they've maybe pointed some things out in you that you're like, yeah, I've felt that for a while. I've just tried to hide it. I tried to pretend. I've tried to fake it. I've tried to just get past it. And maybe what they've said to you actually strikes a chord and you're like, you know what? You're right. Say something like this. Thank you for taking the time to talk with me. What you have shared makes a lot of sense. And I agree with what you've said. Would you pray for me that I'll be open to God's work in my life? Thank you for being a great friend. Humble, gentle. Like this is how we do conflict. It is so different than the world does it. And it takes a lot of maturity and it takes two people on the same page. And like I said, that rarely happens. And so always go into it expecting it not to go exactly the way you planned. All right, number four, after the conversation, guard your heart and your mouth afterwards. You guard your mouth and your heart afterwards. Proverbs 16:28 says, a perverse person stirs up conflict and a gossip separates close friends. If it's a thing between you and another person, probably not appropriate to go immediately, like, can you believe they just said this? I mean, who are they? Who do they think they are? Don't tell me that doesn't happen. I know it happens. I've helped reconcile relationships where that has happened. And so we need to guard our heart and our mouth that we wouldn't go and just destroy what the Lord's trying to reconcile just because our pride was hurt. We don't gossip about them. Instead, we ask God to show us the truth of what just happened. And maybe for you, it's like, hey, I don't like them now. That ticked me off. Instead of talking and venting about them, bring those before the Lord and say, God, why does this bother me so much? What is the root of my anger towards them for saying that? God, would you reveal in me why I'm so triggered by what they did? Instead of going and talking to everybody else about it. I love the words of Hebrews 12:15. It says, God, this is so good. Look after each other so that none of you fails to receive the grace of God. Watch out that no poisonous root of bitterness grows up to trouble you, corrupting many. That is one we should memorize. Look after each other, not just yourself. Look after each other with my words, with my thoughts. Because here's the deal. He ends with this. He goes, that no poisonous root of bitterness grows up to trouble you, corrupting many. You see, conflict between believers affects more than just the people involved. It affects many. People can feel it. They can see it. They can sense it, that there's something not quite right between the two of you. There's a bitterness growing up, right? And so we need to guard our heart and our mouth after the fact. And then maybe if it's necessary, here's if you want to challenge your maturity level, I know this is already challenging our maturity level quite a bit, but if you want to go the extra step, if you're like the Enneagram 3 and you want to achieve, here we go. About 3 or 4 days after someone confronts you, go back to them and thank them for doing it. It'll be a wonderful exercise in your humility, and it will actually bless them because they'll realize, hey, we're gonna be okay. And then the next time this needs to happen, they're not as scared to do it. And then number 5, after the conversation, again, trust God with the outcome. Trust in the Lord and do good. Live in the land and cultivate faithfulness. We want to see the fruit of our labor immediately. We want to see reconcile immediately. We want to see them say, hey, it's no big deal. I forgive you. We're good. Nothing's wrong. But that might not happen. And so we trust God with the outcome. We say, all right, God, I stepped into obedience. I said, I went to them. I did my best to be humble and gentle. God, I listened carefully. I owned my part. So God, now I'm gonna trust you that you're gonna work in their life and you're gonna work in my life and just trust him. Trust him with it. It says, trust the Lord and do good. Not and gossip about them and be angry at them and whatever. People process at different speeds. And the chances are that these conversations may not turn out like we hope, right? We meant good chance, because we're not good at this. That's why we gotta give grace in abundance. But the goal then becomes obedience, humility, and gentleness. Did I confront obediently, humbly, and gently? And did I receive confrontation obediently, humbly, and gently? I think if we start taking these biblical principles and putting them into practice, we're gonna see a total shift in all of our relationships. And God will get the glory because, like we talked about last week, God is not afraid of conflict. He sees it as opportunity to reconcile us to himself through Jesus. And so what we do is we just reflect what Christ has done for us. He says, listen, I have reconciled you. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, I have reconciled you to myself through Christ. So therefore, you are my ambassadors. Now you go and be faithful. You go and be obedient. You go and be humble. You go and be gentle. You go and be gracious. Because God has done that for you and I. When I look at the cross and how God has dealt with me, when I look at the cross and see how God has dealt with humanity, it is with an incredible amount of humility that, and he wasn't even the one who was the offender. He was the offended. It is our sin that separates us from him. And so we now go and be ambassadors. Romans 12:8 says, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. It takes two people. But as far as it depends on you, walk through biblical conflict resolution. Be obedient. Go to them. Be gentle with them. Be kind to them and gracious. As far as it depends on you. Not them, you. And then trust God with the outcome. You know, we'll be down here afterwards if you would like to talk some nuance or you got questions. I would love to help you. I just think conflict resolution is one of the greatest witnesses we have to this world. I think if Christians handled conflict differently than the world, then the gospel would look wonderful. Because no one wants to be canceled. We all want grace. And so I think this is why we took 2 weeks on this. It is a big deal that we do conflict in a way that glorifies God and draws other people to Jesus, because he has dealt with us obediently, humbly, gently, and graciously. Let me pray. Lord, I want to thank you for tonight. God, thanks for your word, God, that just gives us proverb upon proverb and verse upon verse about how we are to do life with one another. God, would you change our hearts as it pertains to conflict? Would you first help us remember how you have dealt with us with such loving kindness and gentleness? That you didn't reject us, you didn't cancel us, you drew us near through Christ. God, would you give us the maturity? Would you give us the courage to step into conflict, to glorify your name, to grow our faith, and to honor one another? That we would deepen our relationships to your glory and for our good. In your son's name, amen.